This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
women and girls around the world continue to be blocked from positions of power and authority. They continue to be prevented from getting a basic education. They are disproportionately victimized by violence and abuse. They're still paid less than men for doing the same work. That's still happening.
That's former President Barack Obama speaking in South Africa. We'll have full details of his trip coming up.
Also, the first commercial flight between Ethiopia and Eritrea in 20 years is scheduled for tomorrow, another milestone in restoring ties between the two countries.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Former U.S. President Barack Obama honored Nelson Mandela today, recalling how the late South African leader inspired him and the rest of the world. In a speech the day before the 100th anniversary of Mandela's birth, Obama gave a lecture with echoes of Martin Luther King's "I Believe" speech that clearly aimed to inspire.
I believe in Nelson Mandela's vision. I believe in a vision shared by Gandhi and King and Abraham Lincoln. I believe in a vision of equality and justice and freedom and multiracial democracy built on the premise that all people are created equal and they're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. And I believe that a world governed by such principles is possible and that it can achieve more peace and more cooperation in pursuit of a common good. That's what I believe. And I believe we have no choice but to move forward. That those of us who believe in democracy and civil rights and a common humanity have a better story to tell. And I believe this not just based on sentiment. I believe it based on hard evidence.
Obama also brought up the continuing struggle of women to gain equality and better lives.
Women and girls around the world continue to be blocked from positions of power and authority. They continue to be prevented from getting a basic education. They are disproportionately victimized by violence and abuse. They're still paid less than men for doing the same work. That's still happening.
He criticized the rise of authoritarianism. While he did not mention his successor Donald Trump by name, the inference to the divides in the U.S. were clear.
Look around. Strongman politics are ascendant, suddenly, whereby elections and some pretense of democracy are maintained, the form of it, but those in power seek to undermine every institution or norm that gives democracy meaning. In the West, you've got far-right parties that oftentimes are based not just on platforms of protectionism and closed borders, but also on barely hidden racial nationalism.
And Obama spoke out against crackdowns on the press and social media, along with the increasing spread of unsubstantiated rumors that are passed on as facts.
The free press is under attack. Censorship and state control of media is on the rise. Social media, once seen as a mechanism to promote knowledge and understanding and solidarity, has proved to be just as effective promoting hatred and paranoia and propaganda and conspiracy theories.
Obama is making his first visit to Africa since leaving office early last year. He stopped in Kenya on his way to South Africa.
And Yehi is standing by live now on the phone with us in Johannesburg is Nadia Sammy, who is covering Obama's trip to South Africa. And thank you so much for joining us, Nadia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Nadia, first of all, can you tell us, of course, we can hear the cheers from Obama's speech just earlier. So what is really the reaction so far? What's the mood like?
It was really a jubilant, mostly young crowd in Johannesburg that greeted Obama. They sang and they chanted, yes we can, as he took to the podium. Now, he kicked off with humor, saying he wasn't actually invited to South Africa, but he was ordered to attend by Graça Machel, who's, of course, the widow of Nelson Mandela. That immediately hit the right note for the crowd, who stayed with him and was riveted throughout his speech.
And also, what's on tap for him tomorrow? What are his plans?
So we know that the Obama Foundation is hosting around 200 young leaders from around the African continent. He mentioned quite a few of those young leaders in his lecture today. He's expected to meet with them and hold discussions with them, obviously encourage them with the work that they're doing. And that's all part of his youth engagement work that we've seen him embark on since leaving the presidency.
And then you mentioned that it was mostly a youthful crowd there in the stadium. So what is other reaction to former President U.S. Obama's speech?
So he tapped into world events such as corruption, inequality, the difficulties facing women and the youth. And he's encouraged young people to take up the baton and continue marching and fighting for their rights. He also encouraged the rich to share their wealth. This was greeted by wild cheers from the crowd, as there are issues that really go to the core of young people in South Africa. Young people are fighting for fair and quality education. They're fighting for access to the workplace. They're fighting for, women are fighting for equal rights to men in the workplace to earn the same salaries. He also spoke out against looking down on people because of religious differences or cultural differences, etc. Those are all things that are relevant to young people in South Africa today. And they really were encouraged. As I walked out of the stadium, it was clear from the chatter gang on around me that he had managed to rally up the crowd. A lot of people actually saying that they were inspired after hearing former U.S. President Barack Obama speak today.
Great. And thank you so much for that reaction. We appreciate that. That's Nadia Sammy in South Africa, where President Obama is visiting.
The first commercial flight between Ethiopia and Eritrea in 20 years is scheduled for tomorrow, another milestone in restoring ties between the two countries. In just the last few days, Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki has visited Ethiopia's capital, where he met with reformist new Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The two even attended a concert together. Yesterday, Eritrea reopened its embassy in Addis Ababa 2 decades after it was closed. Phone links have been restored. Now the two countries are discussing how to jointly build their economies. Just a month ago, tensions remained high after a bloody border war. Now, they say, their state of war is over, drawing international praise.
The head of the UN mission to Libya, Gassem Salame, says it would be unwise to conduct elections in Libya this year unless military activities there come to an end. Salame's statement yesterday to the UN Security Council came as exports from Libya's eastern oil fields have been suspended for almost 2 weeks since Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army took over full control of the oil crescent. Jason Pack, founder of Libya Analysis, spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about the economic impact of the shutdown and its political ramifications.
The economic impact was very acute but very short-lived. Haftar took over the oil crescent, which he had controlled since September 2016, only after he had to evict the federalist and Islamist leader Ibrahim Gazran, who had, for just a few days in June, taken those ports over from him. The economic impact was the loss of the majority of Libya's income for about a month. So in total, that's about $3 or $4 billion, if you include some issues of damage and other legal issues.
The government of National Accord called on General Haftar to release the oil fields. But what did really prompt him to change his mind? Was it the UN, France, or any other external pressure?
This is an excellent question, and we're all wondering this, because Haftar never tried to illegally export oil through the Eastern NOC, which would have been in violation of many UN Security Council resolutions, which shows that he only pretended to transfer them to the Eastern NOC as a bargaining chip. And as a bargaining chip, we want to know, what did he cash it in for? It would seem that there was some mediation and some pressure by outside powers. I'm not privy to information of whether or not U.S. envoys or a threat from the Trump administration or issues of the U.N. process or potentially the French were what tipped the scales for him. But it's likely that many foreign powers either pressured him or offered things if he was willing to find a face-saving solution.
According to sources close to the administration in the eastern Libya, General Haftar aimed to win political concessions from the GNA, notably to dismiss the bank's governor, Sadiq al-Kabir, accused of financing rival forces. What's your take on that?
Well, this is exactly the argument that I put forth in my El Monitor article. I think that's the correct analysis, that this wasn't a fight about oil. It was a fight about the money that oil generates and how that money is spent. It doesn't appear that Sadiq al-Kabir will necessarily leave right now, but rather that the central bank will be audited and various reforms that were agreed on previously, there's a quote-unquote commitment that they'll be carried out. Is that enough? In other words, should Haftar have held out to have achieved greater aims? I can't say. Will he remain popular in the East as a result of this move? I think so. I think that his supporters see that he's acted in a principled fashion to try to improve the interests of the East and to set Libya on a better course.
So would that development negatively impact the political process or the planned elections before the end of this year?
I actually think it'll positively impact the political process. It was bad for Libya's economy to have these things blocked. It was bad for the international law precedent because it's illegal to boycott or blockade an asset to get a political concession. So I don't agree with Haftar's action. But if it's brought forces in Tripoli and those in the East closer to a compromise, that might be good for them to be on the same page politically.
That was Jason Pack, founder of Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy.
Libyan officials say police who checked a suspicious truck found 8 migrants, including 6 children, who had died from suffocation. Another 90 immigrants were taken to the hospital, some in serious condition. They were from Africa, Arab countries, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. The refrigerated truck was normally used to haul meat and fish. It was unclear if the victims suffocated from lack of oxygen or from petrol fumes. The truck was found in the western coastal city of Zuwara. The coastal area is often the starting point of the perilous boat crossings on the Mediterranean to Europe. Officials said they recovered life jackets from the truck. Libya's Coast Guard says it stopped a boat loaded with 158 African migrants in the Mediterranean in the western town of Qoms on Monday. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 1,000 people have died at sea this year for the 5th year in a row.
Nigeria's ruling All Progressives Congress, or APC, has suffered a major setback following the emergence of a breakaway group. It is known as Reformed APC. The group accuses the government of President Muhammadu Buhari of incompetence, abuse of power, impunity, and infidelity. Baba Galadima, the leader of the group and longtime associate of Buhari, said they will work with like-minded groups to offer Nigeria a qualitative leadership. In its reaction, the APC dismissed reports of a split in the party. The party spokesman Balaji Abdullahi says the action of the group is mischievous and ill-advised. He says the party is investigating the membership status of the breakaway group. The APC has elected new national officers to head the party led by former Governor Adams Asomugwe. Dr. Emmanuel Ona is a senior lecturer in the Department of Political Science at the University of Lagos. Reporter Mike Mbonye asked him if the APC's new officers have the skills to reconcile the different parts of the party.
Issues of politics borders on coalition of forces, but it's so unfortunate that in the case of Nigeria, alignment and realignment of forces has been always on a very, very retrogressive note. But I can assure you, from point of view of the record so far posted by the incumbent government, which doesn't seem anything in the positive light, the facts are there that they stand a good chance. But as it has to do with their challenges, one, in Africa, the power of incumbency, especially for a very, very draconian and insensitive-minded set of politicians, the power of incumbency can always be utilized in a very, very terrible manner to orchestrate whatever evil designs the people in power have. Then, the second challenge they have is a case of having a coalition of what you might regard as a bit of strange fellows, right? Because politics in Nigeria is not ideologically driven. If it is not ideologically driven, then it means that people who actually coalesce together might not really have a defined purpose of intent. And if it borders on selfishness, that selfish intent might actually be the very rock that might shatter their intent.
In previous elections, some opposition parties also signed a similar pact to win the People's Democratic Party before the formation of the APC. How feasible can this arrangement work for them?
I think I gave a hint to that effect. It worked against PDP, and I don't see any reason why it cannot work against the APC. Principally, because APC as of today, having actually been in the seat of power for the past 3 years, does not have any credential to even come and canvass for both before the people. So if the so-called opposition know their onions very well, I don't think APC stands a chance of not being unseated. That is my candid opinion.
The ruling APC says the formation within it of the splinter group, the reformed APC, will not affect its chances in the 2019 election. How do you see their influence in the new arrangement? Are they likely to join the opposition coalition?
Well, reformed APC, people should actually get to the root of appreciating the fact that when you're talking about reformed APC of today, the bulk of them are part and parcel of what used to be the new PDP. So if that happens to be the case, you now see reformed APC heading back to where they came from. And that eventually will give PDP, which to me all this while seems to be a very, very coalition of ill-organized and ill-focused set of human beings. But if, for instance, the so-called reformed APC now throws their weight behind them, I mean, there will be a concentration of minds, and in the real sense of the word, the challenge of the incompetent and inept type of leadership APC have provided for the past 3 years should be a basis on which they should actually come together. And I see that happening within a very, very short time.
There is also speculation that the opposition parties may have problems getting a presidential candidate to contest against President Buhari. From the interest shown so far, how will you rate their chances in the election?
The truth about it is that people, when they talk about President Buhari, they talk about him as if, outside Buhari, that no other person can lead this country. For me, that is a very, very false assumption. Because if anyone should be very, very candid to him or herself, President Buhari does not really parade any credential to even appear before Nigerians to ask for their re-election. If that happens to be the case, principally, I see President Buhari as already a discredited candidate. Now, he's just left for the opposition. And when I say the opposition now, the so-called coalition, to agree, because the major thing why the minority always rule over the majority is as a result of what you might regard as a state of ill organization. If they should organize themselves properly, and I think they have a lot of individuals, because it's an insult to this great nation where people should come and tell us that outside Buhari, who else? It means a lot of Nigerians, especially those of us who parade ourselves as universities, active, faculty-willing individuals, to be a kind of a wasted generation. Nigeria seems to have a plethora of highly enlightened, highly sagacious, and very, very positive-minded human beings, which if the so-called opposition, if they have the intent of the people at heart, they can pick any of them and let those people come and address these people at the point of their needs. There is no basis they won't unseat current President Buhari.
That was Dr. Emmanuel Ona, a senior lecturer in the Department of Political Science at the University of Lagos. He was speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria.
The World Health Organization says it expects the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo to be over on July 24th. That will mark 42 days, meaning two incubation periods of 21 days each since the last patient infected with the Ebola virus was released from care. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The countdown toward the end of the Ebola outbreak in the DRC started on June 12th. If no other cases of this fatal disease are identified by July 24th, the DRC's Ministry of Health will announce the end of the disease the following day in an elaborate ceremony in the capital, Kinshasa. The World Health Organization says that from April 4th, when Ebola was first detected, through July 9th, there have been 38 confirmed cases, including 29 deaths. This is the ninth outbreak of this fatal disease in DRC in the past four decades. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA the World Health Organization and partners were able to contain the virus in record time because of lessons learned from the West African Ebola outbreak in 2014 and 15. That epidemic killed more than 11,000 people. She says everyone involved in the operation reacted rapidly and robustly to this emergency. She says better use also was made of the tools available for fighting Ebola.
This time we had a new tool that we didn't have before, a vaccine, and potentially this also made it easier to explain to the population that even if it's a serious disease, we can stop it and we have a vaccine to help stop it.
It only takes one case of Ebola to set off a fast-moving epidemic. So Shaib says it is important to quickly mobilize to combat the disease. She says WHO and partners will not let down their guard. She says active surveillance for Ebola continues and every suspected case will be promptly investigated. She says the National Survivors Association is being created to provide essential medical follow-up and psychosocial support to those who have been stricken with the disease and fortunately have lived to tell the tale. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Egypt's parliament passed a series of controversial bills yesterday. One offers citizenship to foreigners who deposit about $400,000 in a local bank, leave it there 5 years, and live in Egypt during that time. Lawmakers said foreigners who take up the offer would have no political rights until after 5 years of citizenship. The bill must be approved by President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. It has drawn criticism from some legislators as well as on social media. One legislator accused the government of selling Egyptian citizenship to bring investment to the country. Another law approved by parliament could give immunity to senior military officers for violence carried out during the 2013 overthrow of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi. Hundreds of protesters were killed during that period when security forces broke up sit-ins in support of Morsi. Another bill would regulate the press and media, drawing criticism from journalists.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturday. Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is our moment. We are speaking out to end malaria.
This is DJ Drogba. Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Join me. United, we can beat malaria.